Welcome, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us today. I have my friend, Haley Davis, who is also in my teacher's club. That's how I know her. And today we're talking about Hamilton Act 2, because this is the 10-year anniversary for the musical Hamilton. And I think it's really a treasure chest of all the different things we can learn from this. It's a magical piece of mastery that we both are really passionate about. And for Act 2, or the second part of the show, we're really talking more about the vowels, about the stressing, about the rhyming, about how there are things in our speech patterns that we have a hard time putting our fingers on that we can call part of voice, right? And how voice can be reflected. And there's these things that are really difficult to learn maybe in school, but Hamilton is such a wonderful example. And we're going to talk about speed and how when you speak faster, that could actually be doing you a disservice. And when we say going faster, how you can do it really well and preserve the things that you need to, so that when you speak faster, actually you can speak better. So that's what we're going to talk about in today's show, and I hope you really enjoy it. I'm Bianca, your personal American accent coach, and I'm here to help you master an American accent in English, because your voice is your choice when it comes to how you sound. I try to release a podcast episode every 2 weeks, and so you should really subscribe to whatever podcast platform you use so that you don't miss the newest episode. And by the way, if you want to see the full video of the episode, it's available at Accent Coach Bianca on YouTube. Now, let's get on with the show. Welcome back, Haley. I feel like we just saw each other, actually. And I say Haley, but I know that it's so funny because last time I forgot to have you introduce yourself at the beginning and we scrambled to do it at the end because I see you like every week, but our listeners don't. So we're going to start with that. Haley, could you introduce yourself and tell us who you are, what you do, and why we should love you?
Yeah, no, that's a great idea. It does feel like it was just yesterday. But when it comes to Hamilton, our conversations do all bleed together. So to be fair, you can't talk enough about any musical, really. But my name is Haley. I have an Instagram, LinkedIn page, all of the good things for accent coaches, because I want to help people on their fluency journey, especially advanced speakers. I work a lot with medical professionals and moms, which is a fun mix. It gives me a variety of friends that I'm essentially making. I'm essentially professional bestie, I guess, helping you build your listening skills, you know, and enjoying the conversation along the way. My channel is Fluent with Haley, H-A-Y-L-E-Y. So yeah, that's me. Look at us being so organized, saying it at the beginning.
I know.
I have to move it.
Exactly. And we have all of our notes, like we're ready to talk. Because for me, I don't know if this is true for you, but I have to stop myself because I would go on and on and on and on. Not only are we having these two podcast episodes to celebrate the 10-year anniversary of Hamilton, but also I'm making a bunch of YouTube videos too. So I'm like Hamilton on the brain. I'm just like always thinking about it. And it's, yeah, I've gone down this rabbit hole by myself and now with you. So I'm really excited. And yeah.
Yes, our WhatsApp messages have completely changed. Now it's throwing around lyrics. I definitely had Hamilton songs stuck in my head a lot more since we were prepping to talk about it more. But I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. No complaints.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Definitely not. Maybe we even need an excuse, you know, to like listen to it more often.
Yeah. I mean, because to be honest, I'm always listening. When you think of a musical that really is genius, kind of like Hamilton the musical, I find myself reflecting and thinking about it often. And I think it's that way with any kind of art. Sometimes I'll be thinking about a painting or another song or a poem. So it's only fitting that we make space for Hamilton, especially with the 10th anniversary. So yeah, we enjoyed the first act. Done. Spoiler alerts are coming up ahead.
So. Exactly. And if you, and so we can say people stop right here. If you haven't listened to the other episode, you could actually listen to these two episodes independently. So if you're just stumbling upon this podcast and you're like, Hamilton Act 2, oh, maybe I should go back. I would say it's probably not necessary, but you could listen to the two episodes independently and still get a lot of the benefits, because we want to talk about how can this one musical really help us become better speakers, right? And it's complex, it's complicated, there's lots of stuff going on, which makes it a treasure chest, I think, of things. And last time we talked about vowels, a little bit of rhythm, and we're going to dive a bit deeper into this too. So let's first start talking about, let's say, vowels. Let's bring it back around to vowels, because we said I'm the queen of vowels. I love vowels. You mentioned last time that we only write a certain number of vowels, but we speak with a lot more varieties. Maybe you can elaborate on that a little bit first to kick it off.
Yes. So depending on the kind of English that you speak, there's technically five vowels that we would write. We can use a couple letters to combine them and make some additional ones. But yeah, there's not five vowel sounds in English. Not any English. Australian English, British English, American English. There's at least 19. Depends on who you talk to that day. And the research is pretty mixed. Because of that, I think you have to get your vowels down with English.
Yes.
Even if it's simply elongating your vowels versus your consonants. I have seen some accent coaches talk about, hey, if you don't catch anything else that I teach you from my YouTube videos or whatever, it's that you really need to learn where to rush and where to linger. And usually you're going to be lingering on vowels. So that's definitely true for Hamilton, the musical, mostly because rap and Broadway type music tends to be a lot more conversational compared to the, you know, traditional pop or, you know, jazz, whatever. I guess jazz isn't typical, but in my head, that's what I'm listening to. But it's going to be a lot more conversational, which means you're going to really need to pay attention to your stress patterns, which syllable in the word that you're emphasizing. And then also, yeah, those vowels, you really got to elongate them. So that's something, you know, you don't have to get perfect, but just become more aware of, hey, am I going like 0.1 second on this vowel or am I going more like 2 seconds? Let me shoot for 2 seconds because that's going to sound a lot more natural. You want to make sure that they can understand you.
And the closer you speak to anybody, right? If I'm in the room with a grandmother versus a child versus a student, the more closely we speak to each other, the more closely we relate, right? It's just human nature, right? I think that's more the point is the communication, the connection that we're making. But I want to back up for a second because you said something and it made me think like, oh, I think there's more to that. When you said jazz, I know you were just throwing it out there, but think about how much of jazz is, it has rules, jazz has rules, but then it just breaks all the rules, right? I feel like English is the same. You have to know the rules in order to break them, and then you can make something amazing. And I think that's kind of like what we're talking about too. You have to know where the syllable stress patterns are, and you have to know how to combine those things. And where does the genius come into in the lyrics is how that works, right? Is knowing all that stuff and being able to play around with it so that you end up with something amazing and magical, I think. So I know you were just kidding around, but I think jazz is a good metaphor.
I would even say, I don't even know that it's an English thing that breaks the rules. I think that's a lot of art.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Breaks the rules on purpose, but also even just conversation. I think you see that a lot in conversation. When I hear my Arabic speaking friends talking, I'm like, it's not the formal way. It's not that there aren't rules and that they don't have to be followed, but it's knowing which rules are flexible and when we can flex them. So yeah, I think art is one way where when it's done really well, everyone drools over it like we are. So, you know, that's just it.
Exactly. Drool. Yeah. I'll give you an exact example of that. So if we're talking about vowels, right? Now, what we're leading into is rhyming. And I have a really good example of that idea of like, jazz is actually a pretty good metaphor because it kind of breaks the rules. And that's what we like about it. So if we're thinking about the word tyranny, right? Tyranny. E-E. Tyranny.
That's
tyranny.
It's used in a lot of the songs of Hamilton.
Exactly. And so it's at the end of one line. And then the next line I first noticed ends in he. And I thought, oh, tyranny, he. Okay, we're rhyming. But then I looked a little closer and I noticed that the other words are here and he. Mm-hmm. And it's and is reduced to un. So it's e, here and he, here and he, tyranny. Boom. Beautiful rhyme. How does that break the rules? That's not normally one word. It's here and he. That's three words put together to match this other word. Fabulous. So we're matching not only the exact vowel sounds, not the letters like you were describing, but also we said the syllable patterns, right? So that's just an example that came to my mind of why I think Hamilton is also really genius is because when you look at the exact rhymes, like I'm sure Lin-Manuel Miranda had to go through draft upon draft upon draft and switch one little word and switch it to "and he." And he's like, oh, that works so much better. You know, I would love to have been in that room where that happened to see.
Yeah. Is that one of the cabinet battles, I think? Yeah.
That one, yeah, that example that I'm giving is from cabinet battle number two, yeah. And Jefferson is speaking. Mm-hmm.
They fight against tyranny.
Yep.
Hamilton is here and he rather not have this debate.
Yeah.
I'll remind you, he is not Secretary of State.
Debate state.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not just rhyming at the end. It's rhyming in the middle, which is one thing that typically happens a lot more with rap or with spoken word.
And
it makes it, I think, more incredible because that's a skill that you're building. It takes a lot of talent to do that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, stand with your brothers as they fight against tyranny. Yep. I know that Alexander Hamilton is here and he would rather not have this. Oh, yeah, here and he. Tyranny. Yep. I like that.
Isn't that amazing?
I hope you listen to this song now and you think of us.
That's cabinet battle number two, actually. And that's when Jefferson is speaking.
Okay, I like it. But yeah, no, there's so many rhymes, especially the second act. It gets even more intense. You know, it was already amazing in the first act.
Absolutely. Yeah, but they've got to follow up on it, right? And so let me read a little bit more from that cabinet battle. I'm just going to go through some of the rhyming words and think about the vowels, right? So first one, land. Next line, hand. What's the vowel there? It's ah, right? As in cat, but even better, take it a step further, it's ah with a nasal, with an N after it. So land, hand. So they match even more perfectly. I love that. After that, he's got land, hand, and then the next one is stand, which he says twice. So three right in a row, really good. Then we have the tyranny, hearany, debate, duh, and then a bait. Then he says secretary, of state. So a debate of state. So we have this sound. I don't know about you, but it's one of my favorite sounds in the whole of the English language. What would we call that?
The schwa? Is that what you're referring to? The lovely
little schwa? The most important sound for people out there? Yes, absolutely, guys. And if you're listening to this now and you're thinking, okay, vowels, rhyming, I can't rap. Okay, maybe you don't want to rap, but you do want good rhythm. And part of rhythm is reduction. And a lot of words, we use the schwa sound to reduce. So instead of state, we say of state. So just knowing that one sound, I think, is going to put you ahead.
You see this in so many words that start with D-E or R-E. Mm-hmm. We say reflect or deflect or debate, like he just used in that line, debate. It's really common to see that sound right before the emphasized or stressed syllable. And so I think that's a good thing to notice. I really loved, I know this is a different song. It's The Room Where It Happens, but I feel like you can't go wrong with that song, right?
Absolutely.
There's, you know, the line, but no one else is in the room where it happens. I think in some languages, they don't have the ooh as strong. It's more of a like ooh. It's shorter. Like
it's shorter.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. And we would say ooh, like almost extend it. And I loved the line before it is, we just assume that it happens, but no one else was in the room where it happens. And there's this emphasis that you see on whom. And I really loved that. I feel like it went so well with the music. That's one of the things about musicals is they do tend to be conversational. And so I think that's an element of why we connect with them. But do you have any more lyrics that were rhyming that were on your mind?
Oh, well, I wanted to say something about the one you just said, right? Because you mentioned it before, and this was a good example. You were saying we have end rhymes, right, at the end of the phrase, and then we have what we call internal rhymes. So if we take that part of the song, I don't know if that's the refrain, but he says, no one knows how the game is played, the art of the trade, two end rhymes, how the sausage gets made. And then we switch to two internal rhymes. We just assume, assume that it happens, but no one was in the room when it happened. So I think that's just amazing because we shift from end rhymes to an internal rhyme. And then on those last two, the word happens is at the end and it repeats itself. I think that's a super way to play with the kind of rhyming that we have too. You know what I mean? Yeah. Love it. Love it. Love it. Like, oh, I can't stop singing the praises. But number one, vowel sound, right? Know the exact sound that it's making, not just the spelling, like the letters, like you said, because remember we just mentioned schwa And schwa can be spelled with A and I and E and O and U and Y and sometimes nothing at all. Here's the most important sound. How are you supposed to know where it's hiding? Well, it's hiding everywhere, you know? So just to bring that around too. And then syllable stress. Let's think of the word we started with. Tyranny. Tyranny. So when you were saying elongate the vowels, where do we then elongate it more? We stretch it on the stressed syllable. So right. Tyranny, tyranny, tyranny. They're both E's, but the yes. T is longer than the E in the letter Y at the end.
Yes, kind of a funny thing because a lot of three syllable words in English, we emphasize the second syllable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. we say develop, granola. Mm-hmm. But with tyranny, for some weird reason, we emphasize the first syllable. It's probably has a different language of origin because newsflash, a lot of our, which syllable we stress has to do with the language of origin, how it's spoken, mm-hmm. language of mm-hmm. origin. I think it almost is this comical word to me, tyranny, instead of tyranny. So, I mean, I get it out there. If you're like, I can't win, English is too weird. We promise there are rules. But there is something that just tickles the brain.
Yeah.
When we break the rules. And that's mm-hmm. true in every language. We're pointing it out in ours because uh-huh. that's our native language.
Yeah. But that's where the art happens. I think that's where the humor often happens, right? When you get plays on words and you're playing around with language, that's where it happens, right? By messing around with that stuff or noticing it anyways, right? So, for example, you mentioned stress, right? So let's talk a little bit about rhythm in other languages versus English, because I think that stress is what's actually happening, what's coming into play right now, right? So we've got rapping, we've got music, we've got a beat, we've got stress patterns. So tell me, for example, if you have a student that comes from, let's say, Arabic or Spanish or something like that, how is their rhythm gonna transfer from the first language over to English, for example?
Right, so typically what we see with Spanish speakers, native Spanish speakers, is that their language very clearly tells them when to stress a sound. And the only reason that they're stressing the sound is because that's how you say the word. There's mm-hmm. no extra emphasis, generally speaking, on words. Your pitch doesn't necessarily have to go up or down dramatically compared to English. And so what happens is we often have students who maybe they are doing really good with connecting words. Maybe they're really making the right sounds, but with their rhythm, they kind of speak very, very fast and they don't know quite which words to combine.
Mm.
We love to take pauses when we speak.
Mm-hmm.
But if you pause in the wrong place, it sounds strange to the native speaker's ear, the native listener's ear. It doesn't mean you're bad at speaking. It just means it might actually affect how well the person understands you.
Mm-hmm.
So typically mm-hmm. what we'll see with Spanish speakers is they tend to just run through the sentence. They either say it very fast mm-hmm. or very slow. And yeah. either way, they're trying to be understood. But what happens is when I speak, I pause and then I pause again
uh-huh.
and again. And that mm-hmm. is really important, especially getting that, yes, we don't have accent marks on our words.
Mm-hmm.
But we need to group the words in certain sections. And we see this a lot with our rhythm. It even comes up with the speed of how we talk. Some mm-hmm. people think if I talk really fast, I will sound more fluent. I will sound clearer. Well, generally speaking, when you speed things up, the opposite happens. But even if you spoke perfectly, pronouncing everything perfectly, you would still be pausing in between certain words. Mm-hmm. And so I think, yeah, that's something that we see. I think when we were talking about beats per minute, was that a conversation we were having recently about, like, in just conversation, what framework it does or mm-hmm. what framework it looks like compared to music? Because a lot of music is in, I think it's 4 beats.
4-4. Uh-huh. 4-4 meaning I'm going to count 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. I'm not stopping, but like you just said, we pause a lot. So if I spoke like this all the time, it would be going and going and you would never hear me pause. And that would be weird, right? Maybe that would be weird,
you know, in English at least.
Or something. Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't give space for that. So what we typically do, at least in English, is if we're counting 1, 2, 3, pause. Mm-hmm. 1, 2, 3, pause. So generally we speak where we have three important words and then we pause. Maybe it's two and then we pause and we pause, or two pause, 1, 2, 3, pause. Yeah. So, but we're trying to think about how many important words do I have?
Yes.
In this chunk, right? If we're thinking of time in terms of the music of a language, for example, we can actually count the beats, at least in English and other time-stressed languages like we have here, right? Yeah. We can count the important words. We can see when somebody stops, right? We can see when they want to be super dramatic. Maybe they say one important word and they wait for three beats. That's super dramatic, right? Or if I'm saying, stop, 1, 2, 3. I told you not to do that. There's 2, 1, and then 2. And then I might say something with three important words. So we have the beats, how many words I'm stressing, but then, like you were mentioning before, speed or pace, right? So you've got three important words and I've got three important words, but maybe I just speak faster than you. Yeah. So there's rhythm and then there's pace. And that's when we're talking about beats per minute, like how many total stressed words will we have per minute? That's going to be my pace, if that makes sense.
And I think we see this, especially in the Hamilton musical, a lot. If we even just think about the name of one of the songs, the Adams Administration.
Mm-hmm.
We don't say the Adams Administration.
That's a long word, administration. Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's a long word. First off, we say shun instead of Sion, which I think a lot of languages, the I-O-N is kind of an E-on sound, right? So we say shun. That's a big thing.
We're thinking of vowels.
We tend to say shun. But second off, the Adams Administration.
Mm-hmm,
so we emphasize certain syllables. And that's not just in the chunks of words. It's in the individual words. We have even an extra stress, even when it's the stressed syllable.
Uh-huh. And I'm going to go off on a little tangent here, but I think it's interesting because we're talking about rapping, we're talking about beats, right? Where does the stress fall? So we've got syllable stress, number one. We've got your general, what we call tonic stress, right? What words are important. But then think about what you just said. You said the Adams administration as opposed to the Washington administration. So we have contrastive stress too. And if you think about it, one more thing, let's take the same thing you just said, the Adams administration. Now, if I think of it as all one thing, I'm going to stress both. The Adams administration, right? So how I say it could give you more information about, am I talking about a variety of a thing, like what kind of administration or whose administration, or am I talking about a singular thing there? And I think that's also interesting for communication, as well as for this idea of rapping. Like sometimes I can't choose and I have to put the stress on something or it'll mean something different. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's so important to build your awareness of that. We're not talking about getting everything perfect, but we're talking about making sure your voice is heard and being able to hear others. So that comes with the territory of getting a feel for what is this intonation? What are some of these rules with prosody, with the rhythm? What's coming up? What am I struggling with? Because depending on your language of origin, that is going to be different. And that's not a bad thing. It just means you have a different starting place. So your target is going to be in a different direction.
Yeah. And let me say a pet peeve since we're on the subject. One thing that people often say, like for me, right? I'm in Mexico right now. I'm practicing my Spanish when I go outside. And for sure, I make mistakes, right? And sometimes when people speak to me, they speak pretty quickly, right? But I'm also from the Northeast, so I'm like a freight train. I speak quickly in English anyways. So it's fine. What really messes me up, though, is when people then they talk more slowly. Well, the rhythm just went out the window. And like, I know you think you're helping me, but at least in English, when we slow down and kind of like do that kind of, I don't know, I don't want to say teacher talk, but like some kind of talk that slows down, often we just lost the rhythm that we had. And that doesn't often help the person. I don't know if that's been your experience, but I know that's been mine on both sides of it, on the teaching side and on the learning side. So
yes, I would agree. I have actually encountered this where I once had a friend of mine who works in the medical field and was saying, you know, I'm operating in English, which is not my native language, and I want to be very clear that people understand me. So I speak very slowly and I enunciate as much as possible. And that's beautiful that this friend was aware and choosing not to speed up, because I think a lot of times that is a non-native professional's tendency. But the tricky thing with slowing down is there's meaning behind your speed. If we think about Hamilton the musical, which song is the fastest? It's going to be whatever song is probably the most stressful. Which song is the slowest? It's going to be probably one of the more serious, maybe somber, maybe even depressing songs. So you're communicating something with your speed and with your pace. And like you said, you tend to lose whatever element of rhythm you did have. I find that if someone can first really master the stressed syllables, if they can really learn how to master that, it's a lot easier to then focus on rhythm. But if a person, you know, is using words frequently, that they're using the wrong stress, and obviously they're not wrong, but they're using the incorrect stress. They're saying granola instead of granola, then it kind of doesn't matter what their rhythm is. You got to start with, okay, what in this word am I emphasizing? And then what in this sentence am I emphasizing? I'm going to emphasize this part, and then I'm going to breathe, and then I'm going to emphasize here. But I would say, yeah, there's this desire to slow down and to pause. And I think it's so good. Thank you for noticing. Pausing is important.
Yeah.
But how are we doing it? Because it communicates something. It really does.
Yeah. And also, so sometimes when we slow down too, and I'm saying a word a little bit more slowly than usual, I can sometimes distort the vowels. And that might not be helping my listener as well. And also because I'm distorting it, they might not then be able to locate what vowel and then what word it is too. So I might actually, out of the kindness of my heart, I might be doing a disservice to people. So just think about that as an alternative, you know, when you're out there, and think about when people say, oh, I have to slow it down. Well, if that's helpful to you, go for it. Just go for it and do what's helpful.
Depending on how slowly you're going. Some people, I do have clients where I'm talking, and yes, we do need to slow it down. But I think the problem with saying, oh, I need to slow down my speech, is that's a very, you are generalizing massive.
Yes.
Yeah. That's like saying English doesn't have any rules.
Uh-huh.
No, that's not how it works. So yeah, I would say it has to be tailored to what language you're coming from, what your dominant primary language currently is, and then how you're showing up, what your sound substitutions are, things like that. That's a huge thing. Which, for those of you who don't know, a sound substitution is when you are making a sound that typically exists in your first language or your primary language instead of the target sound. So like with the word assume, sometimes people say assume because maybe they don't have a sound, but they might think, oh, if I slow down, it'll be clearer. But if they're not saying the vowel as precisely, or they're using a sound substitution, it only further confuses the listener.
Exactly.
Because it's like, assume. That doesn't make any more sense to me. You know, it's the same sound. It's not the target sound. It's not bad to slow down, but you have to know, okay, what does my specific language do? Where do you tend to pause in my primary language? And then compare that to just even listen. Sit in that coffee shop, take out those earbuds or pause that music and listen to native speakers. How many words does it sound like they're saying, like you said, before pausing? So yeah, I wouldn't say slowing down is a cure-all.
Yeah, and I guess we could say, when we say slow, what is very helpful in slowing down, I'm using quote fingers for anybody who is listening rather than watching this on YouTube, but we can say, definitely, you could slow down the pace, like we just mentioned. Yeah. Pace is beats per minute, right? So when I say I can speak more slowly, I can slow down the pace, right? My train can go a little slower as long as it stops at all the right stops, right? As long as the stressing is still there, as long as I'm not distorting my vowels, right? Because often what people do when they go, let's say slow, is then they make everything way too regular, right?
Yes.
And that's the problem, is we don't have a very regular stressing pattern, right? It's short, it's long, it's shorter, it's longer, it's all over the place. So I just want to say, slow down the pace, that's cool, but don't lose all the other elements, right? If your goal is clarity in that case. And it's funny because you mentioned the Adams Administration, and that happens to be one of the slowest songs in all of Act 1 and Act 2. It's only 68 beats per minute. Whereas if we think about what are the fastest songs, well, in Act 1, we talked about a couple of them back in the last podcast episode. But in this one, one of my favorite songs here is one of the fastest in Act 2. I think we mentioned it. The Reynolds Pamphlet. Did we talk about that yet?
I don't think we have talked about it yet. No.
Okay, because that's a good one. I like the rhyming. We talked about rhyming a little bit today. We can come back down around to rhyming. But just to know, if you're thinking about pace and what we can call speed, that is the fastest one in Act 2, right? So the Reynolds Pamphlet is really good, and I like it for another reason too. I want to go into the next topic and see what you think. So do you remember in Act 1 when Angelica says, I know my own sister like I know my own mind?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
You will never find anyone as trusting or as
kind.
But do you remember how it felt the first time she said that? Like, if you were to put a label on that and say, oh, she sounds, I don't know, caring, trusting, overprotective. If you had to like label the emotion behind that sound from her intonation, how would you say she sounded the first time you heard it?
So in the first one, it was during the rewind.
Yeah, I think so. They meet at the ball. So I think it's when they meet. Yeah,
satisfied. Mm-hmm. So she's, I know my sister like I know my own mind, you will never find. It's very emotional, but it's very passionate. Yeah, I would say that's what comes up for me. Doesn't she repeat that line, though, later in the... Oh, it does.
That's where I'm going with this, right? Exactly. So the first time that they meet and she's introducing her to her sister, you said she's passionate, right?
Yes.
But would you put it on a positive feeling scale or a negative feeling scale when she first says it?
I would probably put it on a negative, because in the song, she's really expressing regret. In the song, Satisfied.
Mm.
But if we're comparing it to when she says, because I think it's in the Reynolds Pamphlet. That's what
exactly. Yeah.
She repeats the line.
And do you remember why?
Yeah. So what happens? Oh, I remember this. Okay. So it's hit me now. So Angelica is coming back. She's left the country because she got married, lived somebody in like Europe. I don't know.
France or something. Yeah.
Not important to the story. Yeah. All that's important is the Reynolds Pamphlet comes out, which is where basically Hamilton writes a Dear America letter to the public saying that he had this affair, but he didn't like spend the government's money. So he just wanted you to know he's like not that bad of a guy. It's a really scandalous, vile, like pretty much immoral idea. Because I think most people were like, well, yeah, it's good that you were good with your money, but like,
you're also cheating on your wife,
who
happens to be Angelica's sister.
Yeah. And so Angelica, the sister of his wife, comes back and he's like, oh, thank God you understand. Alexander is saying that. And she's like, I'm not here for you. She's angry. She's so angry. And she says, I know my sister like I know my own mind. You will never find anyone as trusting or as kind. She's a bit firm. She's angry. So I guess maybe some people would say the first time she says it in Act 1 that she's happy.
Maybe more caring in a way, I get the feeling of. Like, there's more than one emotion going on there, for sure, right? Because she actually likes Alexander, but she's, you know, getting her together with her sister and things like that. I think it's complicated the first one. If nothing else, it feels more caring to me. Second time, same exact lines, same words, same stress, almost the same pace, right? Beats per minute, almost the same pace. But what's different?
Her intonation, her actual voice. You can say the same note and say it a different way. I can say, I know my sister like I know my own mind. Mm-hmm. I know my sister like I know my own mind. Mm-hmm. Those are the same pitches, but they're different. Those are the same intonation, same changes, but they're different. One is, you know, communicating more desperation. With Angelica's, it's communicating anger and fury. She's very angry with him. She's very much done, you know, absolutely not. How could you harm my sister? How could you publish this? What's wrong with you? She's angry. And I think it's honestly a good exercise to do for anyone who is really wanting to improve their intonation, work on their prosody. Write down a couple sentences that you say regularly, and then just practice saying them in different emotions. Okay, I'm going to say I'm really sad this time. Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to say them really angry. Now I'm going to say them really happy. This is a good practice for you because you really do want to make sure you have enough range when you're speaking English. So it doesn't matter if you have a higher voice in English or a lower voice. You still want to make sure you have a range that can go up and down.
That's where intonation is. Intonation is the relative up or down based on my baseline, right? Maybe I have a very low voice, but if I can get a little bit lower, then I can show some of those emotions where I need to show that. Because otherwise, the person who's listening, they might not really get what I'm trying to communicate. They might hear the words and they might understand the words, but they don't get the meaning kind of behind
it. This is really important. We see this a lot in my local English class. I'm working with low literacy adult immigrants, but I'm still teaching a little bit of prosody because you need it. And so one of the things we go over is that when you're asking a question on the last word, your voice needs to go up. Now, that's a very overgeneralized, basic thing to teach, but it's a starting place. So we always go, with our voice. We have to go, we have to go up with it. And I love that you see it. It's in notes, not in the conversation. He's singing it, but in the song, "What Did I Miss?" He doesn't go, "What did I miss?" Mm-hmm. If you're not watching this, it's straight, 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 straight. "What did I miss?" Mm-hmm. He goes, "What did I miss? Miss, miss." He swings, but he swings up, not down. It's a question. It's kind of rhetorical because he's like, "I'm here now. I'll catch myself up. Thank you." Knowing more about intonation, you can never know too much about it.
I love it. To me, it's like the window into what somebody really means and what they're really thinking, right? Because I know cultures are different and things, and some cultures are a little bit more forward, let's say, you know, or transparent. But sometimes you really have to read between the lines. And I think that's all cultures. But in some ways, for example, in Spanish, you might be using a more formal verb tense, right? You might be using usted or versus tú, or it might be done through grammar. It might be done through word choice. But in English, especially American English, a lot of that real information that you really want to know, it's hidden inside the intonation patterns. And that's why I think it's so important. So number one, I love vowels. Number two is intonation. Definitely, definitely. And along those same lines too, I think the other thing that we wanted to mention was, if we're talking about voice and not just pronunciation or prosody, but what are those things that are kind of hard to put your finger on? Well, remember when we were talking about immigrants, and now I'm thinking about in Hamilton, the accents that are put on too. You know what I mean? So tell me what you think about that, because I think you had a few that you really liked.
Yeah. So I think, first off, one of the cool things about Hamilton the musical is there's way too many characters. And so to kind of help consolidate with it, some of them play more than one actor and actress. So we see the amazing woman whose name is escaping me, who plays Peggy in the first act. Peggy isn't really in the second act, but you know who is? Mr. Laurel Reynolds' wife. So the same person plays her. And we see the same with, I think it's David Diggs. He plays Lafayette in the first act. And then he plays Thomas Jefferson in the second. Because Jefferson doesn't come on the scene until, you know, basically the 1800s. So what I love, though, is that it's the same guy. It's the same actor. But he plays two wildly different voices. In the first act, he's playing Lafayette, who's this French guy. And then, comically, he plays Jefferson, who helped Lafayette with, you know, their Constitutional Revolution, all of those things in France. So then he plays Jefferson, who he's having do this very Southern accent. He lives in Virginia. A lot of people talk about the diversity of the cast. And I think obviously that's worth noting because they're talking about a moment in history that most people weren't represented well, but it's being represented by all people now. What we don't tend to talk about as much is the different voices. Diggs, he's doing a thick French accent, you know? I can't even do it.
He says the revolutionary set with his R's.
He talks about anarchy. Anarchy.
I love that nasality
that is
our vowels. Yeah. He says, anarchy, because it's spelled with the letter A, right?
Anarchy.
Anarchy. Anarchy.
I love that then he switches and he has this like just kind of slight southern accent in the second act. I think it speaks to the diversity of so many people think, oh, I want to learn an American accent. Well, which one? Because there's easily 15. We have as many accents in the United States, just the United States, as we do vowel sounds. So,
at least I could show you a map. Yeah, absolutely. Like, there's so many interesting things out there. And if you think about it, there's a lot more diversity on the East Coast versus when you go in the center and in the West. So maybe you're thinking about where you're going to go live. Maybe you're thinking about general understanding and things like that. But when you mentioned the South and you mentioned how he changed his accent to be a little bit Southern, to bring it back around again, where do we hear that most? The vowels, right?
The vowels. If we are elongating our vowels in just the general American accent, Southern accents take it to a whole new level. They take it on steroids. And I enjoy it. I have a Southern accent. Obviously, it's not the most pronounced one unless I'm trying to be funny or I'm really tired. But I still have a Southern accent, a Southern draw, as we say. So I think it's telling because, you know, he's creating this story, sharing this story, performing it, but making sure we reference, okay, how did the people sound? I love it. Even the woman, I cannot remember her name, who played Peggy, and then she played Mrs. Reynolds. She has a different voice. She's a different character. And I think it's important to recognize that that's kind of how a lot of Americans, how we use English, just like how in Spanish, some people, you're going to use a formal you versus an informal you versus a general you all. It's the same with English. We're going to change our tone of voice or our prosody slightly, depending on who we're talking to and how we want to relate to them. It's all about connecting.
Exactly. Yeah. It's comprehension. Number one, are we understanding each other? Number two, are we connecting? You know, and I think that's what's super interesting. For example, you were just saying the Southern drawl, right? And when I'm looking at what Jefferson says in the cabinet battle number one, think about the diphthongs. And a diphthong is when you have two vowels together, right? So I'm going to read a couple of these. Paid, afraid, shade, ground, around. There's a lot of diphthongs in there. And if you listen to that song, that cabinet battle number one, and then you listen to something where he's Lafayette, you should be able to hear a difference in the length of those vowels very slightly.
It's so true. You can hear such a difference. But I think it's also encouraging because, you know, someone, if they have a French accent, if they have a Spanish accent, that's still beautiful. I am an accent coach. I do help people with speech improvement and I love it. But I don't actually think there's anything wrong with your accent. I'm only here if you feel like something's wrong with it, if it's holding you back, especially in the workforce. Because, I mean, that's a place where you got to make sure all the things are taken care of and you get your money, right? So if it's to help you with money, I love that he was able to morph into different roles. I think that really speaks to, okay, yeah, we can do the same.
Exactly what I was going to say. I was going to say the same thing. A lot of people think, oh, I have to lose an accent. No, you don't. You want to acquire choices, right? You want to say, hey, I'm going into this interview. This is how I want to sound here. Hey, I'm going to go play My Pretty Pony with my nibblings, and I'm gonna sound like this with them, and I have this voice for this place. And as long as you have options, that's what I think we want to give people, is options to do what's best for them in the place that's needed at the time. Something that serves you. How you speak should serve you at all times. But if you're stuck in one place, then you don't have a choice, you know?
Yeah, I tend to view, you know, accents, it's a style. It's a certain mode of communicating or expressing, and you aren't destroying someone's style or taking away their style simply because you have more options. If we consider, okay, this scarf is amazing, these boots are fluffy and wonderful, but if it's, you know, 35 degrees Celsius or 90 degrees Fahrenheit, that style doesn't work. Those boots don't work. So the style has to work for you. And I think it's the same way with accents. If it's not helping you, if it's not helping you get to where you want to go, connect with who you want to connect with, then it's okay to learn how to shift it, but you're not getting rid of something. I mean, my accent changes all the time depending on who I'm around. So I think it's just making sure you have that in your tool belt. You have the ability.
Exactly.
You have it in your closet. The difference.
I was just going to say, we're talking about clothes, so let's keep it closet. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Accents to me are a jacket that you put on and you take off, and you can do that as long as you can, then you can. You know what I mean? Yeah. So yeah, absolutely. So speaking of which, tell everybody where they can find you on your social media and different places like that.
Yes, for sure. So I am typically on LinkedIn and Instagram. That's where I like to hang out. I like to do Tuesday musings on LinkedIn, where I just talk about something fun that's going on in the accent world and my clients and what they're processing. But yeah, that would be on my channels, Fluent with Haley. It's Haylely. Yeah, I love it. I love making sure it's getting to be a part of people's fluency journey is so much fun.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I met somebody the other day and he was an actor and he said, oh, you know, could we meet? Can we talk? Can you give me like an assessment? I was like, yeah, sure. And we ended up staying like an hour and a half. And I just, because, you know, sometimes you just meet people through this job that's amazing. And I love the variety of people that you get to meet. And for me, it's come back to like the connection. So if you're out there, you want to connect with Haley, now you know how to find her. Haylely. Like we always say, I'm Binca. And we'll say thanks, guys, for listening to our really nice episodes about Hamilton, Act 1 and Act 2. And we'll say, you know, next time, at least when a musical comes up, we'll do another episode, if not before, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome.
Let's do it.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. See you soon. See you next time. And thanks, everybody, for listening all the way to the end. You know, if you stay to the end, I like to give you a little glimpse into what I'm up to lately. And at the time that we're recording this, this is about the beginning of June. I've been house sitting at my friend's house for about 6 weeks now. And I'm pretty much done with it because it's a lot of back and forth, right? My friend has two really large dogs. And at first I brought my cat there, and the dogs and the cat, they never, ever got along. So I ended up bringing my cat home, and I was going back and forth kind of every day. And it was great because I got to use the pool, and it's in an area that's beautiful. And I got to like just hang out, you know, and work up there. But also I missed my house. And so now I'm really ready to come home. So tonight will be the last night that I'm spending with the doggies. And tomorrow I'll be in my house full time. And I'm a bit relieved. So I wanted to share that with you guys. And so again, thanks for always listening to the end. And if you have any specific ideas about topics that you want me to talk about or find someone to talk about with about those topics, let me know what topics you're interested in and I'll make it happen. And until then, I'll see you in the next episode. Bye, guys.